I am very excited to bring to you today's guest, Olympian Shannon Barkey. Now, my entire life, I have dreamt of one day maybe being able to attend an Olympic event, right? Maybe if I was in the same general area, shared the same airspace as Olympian, maybe their Olympic mojo might rub off on me. But wouldn't it be cool to one day be the absolute best in the entire world at anything? I mean, fill in the blank, but wouldn't it be cool to be the best in the entire world at what you do? Well, that's what Olympians are. So I had this conversation with Shannon Barkey. She is a former world champion in the moguls. She went to three Olympics. She won the silver medal in the 2002 Winter Olympics in Salt Lake City, and also she won the bronze in 2010. And so I had a conversation with her about what it takes to become the best in the world at whatever. And my thought was, maybe we can incorporate some of that training, some of that mojo into our daily lives, maybe into our jobs, into our relationships. And so here is that conversation. I am really excited to introduce this week's guest, two-time Olympic medalist, former world champion, and a good personal friend, Shannon Barkey. Shannon, thank you so much for joining us this week.
Hi, Joel. Thank you so much for having me. I cannot wait for this conversation. You and I can talk for like hours at a time, so this is going to be fun.
That is right. It's almost as if you really were meant to be a lawyer. I mean, you know how to talk and talk and talk, and it just fascinates me. In fact, that's how we met. Do you remember how we met?
I don't remember the exact first time. I just know that once we, wait, yes, we were on the airplane.
We were
I
on
do
the
remember
airplane.
That. Exactly. Yes.
Yes, and I am a talker, and you are a talker, and you get two talkers next to each other on an airplane, and it makes for a really short flight. But
that was so fun. I remember that. We had such a great conversation, and it's been really cool to be able to work with you on other projects and remain friends. So, see, you do need to open up on an airplane, everybody. You do.
You are so understated, because we were on this plane, and I'm a talker, but I know there are rules to follow when you are a talker. For example, you might not be a talker, so I'll just drop a casual comment like, hey, how are you doing? A fun flight. So what? Something casual like that. If you don't even make eye contact and you look the other way and you just say something under your breath, I know I'm going to avoid you the rest of the trip. But if you engage in conversation, then, hey, you are fair game. And you are so understated, I got to tell you, because I asked you, because we got to that point of the conversation, I asked you, what do you do? What is it that you do? Do you remember what you told me?
I don't.
You were a public speaker, and that got me interested because I'm a public speaker, and so we just kind of got talking about public speaking for the next 2 hours, and then we were approaching Salt Lake City, and I mentioned something about the mountains and how I would love to ski, and I asked you if you skied, and your response was, yeah, you ski a little bit. Well, turns out little bit means a two-time Olympic medalist. Yeah. Thank you so much for joining us today, Shannon.
Yeah. Oh, well, you know, you just can't open with that because then it goes literally downhill from there. So we try and keep it on even ground for a little while. And then right before we leave, if they really want to be friends, then, you know, I'll divulge that information.
Oh, I know. That is so true. I mean, but you were just, for the record, you were in the 2002 Winter Olympics in Salt Lake City.
Yes.
And you won the silver medal then?
I did. I competed in three Olympic Games. I was so lucky to be able to compete in the U.S. on home soil in Salt
Wow.
Lake City. And I won America's first medal in those games,
Okay.
a silver medal on the first day, which was really, really fun. I also competed in Torino, Italy in 2006. And then
Okay.
I won a bronze medal and I retired shortly after the 2010 Olympics in Vancouver. So I feel pretty lucky. I mean, the U.S., Canada, and Italy, like where else would you want to go? Those were the best.
Now, Shannon, I know you are a public speaker. You made that very clear from the beginning, and we're going to get there because I want to know what you're doing right now. But I am a sports nerd. I'm a sports geek. And so I get geeked up just by talking sports. And so, hey, I have you on the line. I just want to know some things. I know my listeners want to know some things.
Yes.
You do the moguls.
Yes.
Freestyle moguls.
Yep.
Okay. Now, how did you choose the freestyle moguls?
Well, okay. So now I just want your listeners to know. So for those of you guys at home that don't know what moguls is, so we go down a slope that's probably 27, 28 degrees. So pretty steep. It's about 300 yards long. So almost 3 football fields.
Wow.
And over that length of, over that, that length of mountain, we go over and around, and as fast as we can over these big bumps. So everybody avoids them when they go skiing, but we, us crazy mogul skiers, we love them.
I'm getting nauseous just listening to this, but go on.
Usually people say their knees hurt. So if you're getting nauseous, totally different.
Oh my goodness.
But once we go over and around all those moguls, we have to hit 2 different jumps that send us high into the air, and we have to execute 2 different tricks as fast as we possibly can. So
what do you mean tricks?
So we do, so when I started mogul skiing, we did like a daffy and a twister and a spread and maybe a 360. But the kids that are there nowadays, well, they're not kids, they're adults.
Right.
They're doing like backflips with full twists or backflips with two full twists in it. So we get in the air and we do different maneuvers, kind of like gymnastics, gymnasts do. So yeah, it's really fun.
Shane, I can't even begin to understand how you do that. You got to understand, I've done the bunny slopes. I've done that.
The green circles.
That's about it. I've gone down the black diamond slopes, but not on my feet. I went down some other way. I just cannot imagine how much courage it took for you the first time you decided, you know what, I'm going down these 28 degree slope with all these mounds and hills, whatever. Yeah, I'm going to go soaring into the sky and flip around and see if I can land on my feet. Were you drunk the first time you decided to do that?
Well, I was 12, so I'm happy to say 12. That I was not drunk. So that's good. Thank you, Mom and Dad. No, but just like everything, you start off doing the easiest thing. You have to put one foot in front of the other, learn. You're, super beginner. So I think that's what's so great is everybody sees it now and they think, oh my gosh, well, how did you do this for the first time?
Right.
And just like everything, we have to learn, and you have to learn at the beginning. So I grew up in Lake Tahoe, California. And when I was 12, one of the coaches from the Squaw Valley team approached me and he was like, oh, Shannon, you've got a lot of energy. Why don't you come and try the sport of mogul skiing? And I was like you, like everybody at home. What the hell? No way. I don't want to do that.
Right.
Moguls are so hard. But after he just kept pestering me, I was like, all right, if you just leave me alone, I'll come and try this stupid sport of mogul skiing. And
I
just fell in love with it. So, it's kind of those things. I would have never in a million years thought to be a mogul skier. I always wanted to be a figure skater. But it was just something that I really enjoyed, was terrible at when I first started, but, kept working at it and wanted to be better than the people that I was next to and my friends. I wanted to beat them. I was competitive.
Right.
So it worked out that it was a really fun sport that eventually I became pretty good at.
So do you remember the first time you went into the sky on your skis?
Oh my gosh. Well, I don't remember the exact first time, but I mean, I just remember, we built this super small jump. And so this is a story that I do remember, though. I remember the first time that I ever did a backflip on skis. And nowadays, you see all these kids, they've got foam pits to jump into, not on skis. They've got the water ramps. That's how we learn. We jump off these plastic ramps into water. So there's a lot of ways where it's it's really safe. But back in the day, we what we called, we guineaed it. So like a guinea pig, you know, like the first time. So we would do Rochambeau, you know, rock, paper, scissors, and whoever lost was the first person to hit the jump. So we'd build this jump, you know, and we didn't know how much speed you had to take into it, how big you were gonna go. You just rock, paper, scissors, you lost, you went first. So I had never done a backflip, and I was with, you know, probably 10 boys. This was a little bit later on because we didn't do this when we were younger. So I was, I think, 18. I was living in Utah, which is where I live now. We were at Snowbird. We built this jump. I lost and had to guinea the jump, but I'd never done it. So everybody said, all right, Shannon, you're just going to hit the jump and then just throw your head back, which is not the thing that you should do, but that's what they told me.
Okay. Hey. Good to know. Good to know.
Right, right.
First time I try it, I'll remember, don't throw the head back.
Don't
I'm taking
throw
notes.
Your head back. So, but I did, they told me where they thought that I should start. I started there. I hit the jump. I threw my head back. My feet came around and I landed my first backflip. So
really,
that was pretty exciting, right?
Wow. Rock, paper, scissors led to your Olympic glory and success. So, hey, you know, it is a good thing to play. Yeah. No, you know what, Shannon, I'm not giving up yet. I think I'm still eyeing the next Olympics, though most likely it might be in the whole sweeping, a curling thing. I'm not giving up. Maybe curling is in my future. I have no idea. Or maybe cornhole. Yeah, you know, a cornhole.
That should be an Olympic sport, which I am terrible at. So I would not be able to make it in that sport. But you, if you've got, you know, a couple cocktails, beers in you, you start throwing them in the hole. More power to you. You can do it.
Hey, I just came from a trip from Iowa where cornhole is very popular. And I actually, at this very moment, I have ordered two professionally designed cornhole, I don't even know what you want to call them.
Boards,
yeah. Sandbags, whatever. Actually, my nephew makes them. And so he's going to make some for me because we have a party coming up. So, hey, why not do some cornhole? If that's what they do in Iowa, we'll do it here in Kansas. But man,
that is awesome.
That is an amazing story. So I want to go now to 2002, Salt Lake City. You finished second.
Yeah.
Again, I'm a sports geek, so I just got to know how this worked out. So when you finished your run, were you first, last? Put me, where were you in the order?
So for your listeners to know, in our sport, we take two runs. So the first run that we take is all random order, and everybody gets a score. And how we get scored is 50% is turns in line. So how we got, you know, how well we get down the moguls, how close our knees are together, how quiet our upper body is, you know, all of those things that the judges look for. 25% is air. So how well we execute our tricks multiplied by the degree of difficulty. And then 25% is speed. So when we come down, we finish our run, you know, we get timed, the judges put in their score, and then boom, out comes a score. So for the second run, they only take the top 17 people. They reverse the order of finish. So if you finish 17th, then you start first, all the way up to first place, and they wipe our scores from the first run clean. So we start with a clean slate.
Everyone starts fresh. Okay.
Everybody starts fresh, and then you go for gold. So now, of course, you want to be the last person to go because you know what you have to do to win. So after the first run in Salt Lake, I was fourth. Which, let's be honest, do you remember anybody that ever finished fourth? No.
I know.
I like to call that the aluminum medal, right? Because nobody remembers that.
Oh, so close, too. So close.
So I knew that the couple World Cups that we had had leading up to the Olympics, I was on the podium. So I knew that I had everything that it took to get onto that podium, but I did not want to finish in fourth place. So I was standing in the gate for my second run, I have never felt this feeling before or since, but it was meant to be. Like everything that I had worked for, it was just like this, the universe came into everything, just clicked. And so I skied out of the gate like a bat out of hell, put down one of the best runs that I've ever put down in competition. And having it at home with, you know, 30,000 right. people down there, my friends, my family, my coaches, everybody that had ever believed in me, you know, were down there cheering. And it just was this immense moment of pride for me.
Wow. Great moment.
It was so incredible. And they said my score, and I was like, oh my yeah. gosh, that's going to be so good. You know, that's going to be tough to beat. So the girl
that
came in.
You knew that was a top score.
Well, I knew that it was going to be pretty good, but there were still three girls that came after me, and they were skiing amazing that year. So the next girl that came after me, my score was ahead of her. The next girl, my score was ahead of her. And then there was one.
Ah, wow. One you went down the last girl, and you were still in first place.
I mean, that's crazy to think, right? But her name was Kari Traum. She was from Norway. And she was up at the top. And I mean, she was like the epitome of what I wanted to be like. Like every time I saw her ski, it kept me going of like, oh, you can one day be as good as this girl, you know?
Right.
And
right,
she's
right.
so nice and this tough competitor. And she was number one in the world. And I remember looking up and being like, come on, Kari, you got it. Ski good.
Right, right, right.
Just not that good, you know?
Not that good. You know, second is fine. Second is fine. No shame in second.
I really wanted to win, you know? But of course, in true Kari Traa fashion, she came down and just lit the course on fire. You know, put down the run that you would expect from her. And won gold. So I remember later that night, you know, we got our medals down at the medal ceremony. And she was, you know, like they gave her Olympic medal and they gave me mine. And I remember looking at my mom and being like, Mom, look, Kari Traa. And then me. And then Kari Traa and me. Like, this is so cool. So it was an incredible moment that I am really, really proud of. And I always get this question, well, how close were you? And I can assure you that I was nowhere close. So she thoroughly kicked my butt. But I was in second. So that is awesome.
Hey, and that actually probably feels maybe better knowing that, hey, if it had been like I don't even know how they do the scoring, but if it was like just a small fraction difference and if you
like
had done
a 1/100th, I know you would always you'd always think about that, right? Nope, she kicked my butt fair and square.
hey, that is exciting. But you still so what are you doing today? I know you started your own company called Team Empower. And so I obviously I worked with you in the past. I'm trying to draw this out for our listeners.
Yeah.
The connection between your Olympic glory and empowering people today. And you have the two words, team and empower. Yep. And so go ahead and unpack that for us.
So it's Team Empower Hour. Actually, you forgot the hour. You can't forget the hour on the end. I mean, come on, Joel. No, I'm just kidding. It's a lot to say. I know.
I just have never thought for you to hold yourself to just 1 hour. But if you can do that, then more power to you. But
well,
no, go
you
on,
know,
go on.
Whenever you're trying to find a name, of course, like the best ones are always taken. So you had to go for, you know, second place. I'm used to second place. So that was second place.
Right.
No, but you know, when I retired in 2010, I owned a coffee company, actually, and about a year into owning that coffee company, I realized that that was not for me, and I liked coffee. It just wasn't the everyday that I wanted to spend. It wasn't what I wanted to do. And I'm all about living in the moment and doing things that you want to do every single day. So, we ended up selling our coffee business, and in 2011. Well, we sold it a long time after that. But in 2011, I was really, really, really depressed after retiring. Everybody, you know, kind of calls it the post-Olympic blues. And I had it bad.
I can imagine.
Yeah. And around that time, one of my teammates died by suicide. And I just felt like, wow, if this affected me... And it affected him so much more and not even, I mean, so many things at play, but I felt like, wow, I need to put my passion where I can help people and I can give back. So eventually, you know, I wanted to start a company where where I could share what I learned through my Olympic experience and help people be more successful. I could go to corporate America. I could say, yes, this is what I did in the Olympics to be successful. You can do the same thing in your job, for your company, in your daily life. And then I really wanted to be able to save Olympians. So to be able to give them a community. So the only people that I hire in my company are Olympians to share their unique perspective so that when we're all struggling and we all need a place to kind of, know, be empowered and be inspired by the people around you, that I'm creating that for the people that I know need help. I think it's a win-win for everybody. I can help Olympians and I can also help people be their best self. So it's something that I'm really excited. Every day I get up and I love what I do.
So we're not all Olympic athletes for whatever reason, even though I envision myself as an NBA star. Apparently they discriminate based upon being able to jump and I can't jump. So I'm not going to be an NBA player, not going to be a professional athlete. But you're saying that really we all have our own dreams, goals, desires, whatever have you. You're living your life and there are things that you can take from your Olympic experience, I assume the training, the discipline, the goal setting, things like that, that can apply to our lives, our everyday lives, and can empower us where we are.
Yep.
And that's what you do then. You help bring your Olympic experience to the everyday life. How's that going? How has that been received?
It's been amazing. And the other thing that makes our company really unique is we really try to do it through activity. So we bring a lot of the core things that are true to us, and we get people out of their chairs, away from their screens, which is very hard to do in COVID.
right.
You know, that's been a big struggle, but that is what is so important, I feel like, is to stand up, do activity, you know, get your heart beating, get your endorphins flowing. So it's been amazing. I know that people need that in their life. And so it's been really fun. I mean, we've had so many comments from like, I can't believe that you're taking all of this of what you guys have done, bringing it into our world, making it relevant.
Right.
And getting us balancing on a BOSU ball or teaching us how to jump rope or, you know, doing all of these other things. So I know it's extremely needed. It's so much fun and I enjoy every single minute of it. It's awesome.
Now I witnessed firsthand how you are received. So you and I joined together to do this class called Champions of Law, where we've kind of brought the same concept to lawyers. And so you kind of brought the Olympic experience to them. And it was fascinating from my perspective to see after you were done talking, all of these people come up to you and they wanted to touch your medals, see the medals. I mean, put it around their neck.
Yep.
Maybe enjoyed that experience. That's kind of fun to see that. But so now I'm assuming when you are going to do some of these activities, you're not actually bringing these corporate executive types and having them going down a 28 degree slope and jumping up into the air. So I'm assuming that's not one of the activities. Correct me if I'm wrong. So, but go give us an example of an activity that you do in one of these Team Empower Hours.
Well, one of my favorite things to do with people is the agility ladder. So if you're not familiar with an agility ladder, it's kind of exactly like it sounds. It's a ladder, but it's actually made out of fabric and kind of plastic strips, and we lay it down on the ground. And I think one thing that we all have that we all try and do every day is multitask, right? So trying to do things with our computer while we're thinking, while we're trying to answer the phone, while we're trying to do this. Well, an agility ladder is essentially the same thing, but just using your feet and your mind. So when we're doing steps through the agility ladder, you know, you're trying to think that you're doing one thing, but your feet may be doing something else. So it's really fun to get people out of their comfort zone and learning different ways to multitask, to focus on different aspects that maybe they haven't focused on. And one of the things that I always tell people is like, you can go through it as fast as you can, but unless you can do it perfectly, you're going to mess everything up. So we right. work on the skills to be able to do it perfectly. And then once we do it perfectly, how we can do that at speed and then getting to, you know, be the fastest that we can. So, and it's really fun. I give people a lot of creativity to kind of come up with their own steps. And one CEO that he was just not into what we were doing. And by the end, like at the beginning, he's like, I just want you to know, I don't want to be here. I don't want to do this. And I'm like, yes, I'm going to change your mind. And by the end, he was getting his whole team. He was doing hands. He was walking on his hands through the ladder,
right.
high-fiving his team. And he was just like, this is so cool. So, you know, it's really shifting that perspective and adding something in that you may have never done before, and if you've done it before, to do it and think about it in a different way. So that's just one of the fun things that we do that's really low impact that anybody can do, whether your age, your ability level, you know, it's all about bringing your game and having fun.
All right, now let's get a little personal here because I know you're an Olympic athlete, so you have to have something to say about this. Failure. How does an Olympic athlete and a successful business person, what are your suggestions on handling failure? And this is what I'm talking about. One time I had one of my first gigs to do, and it was at the most glorious venue you've ever seen. I mean, this is the Midland Theater in Kansas City. It is the downtown theater. We're talking like, you know, chandeliers coming from the sky. Jerry Seinfeld came to this place the very next week after I was there doing his bit. So this was like the main concert hall in Kansas City. All right. So I've been asked to go there and do my shtick. And I got to tell you, Shannon, I have never failed more miserably than I did at that particular moment. I mean, they wanted me to do an hour of my stuff, and this place was packed out. No one was paying attention. It was an utter failure. I was sweating like you would not believe. The microphone fell off my head 3 times during this venue. And yeah, I got to tell you, I have never failed more brilliantly than I did on that particular day. But I learned a lot about myself. I learned a lot about my goals, my careers, you know, from that experience. I don't know. Do you have anything to offer people as they face failure in their lives? How do they move forward from that?
You know, I think there's so many different ways to think about failure, right? Like in my head, I feel like our coffee business, right, was a failure, even though we successfully sold it. But to me, it was just like, wow, I really wanted to have this multi-million-dollar business, and I wanted to move forward. You know, I've also had 2 miscarriages, and I think moms, you know, feel like, oh my gosh, I'm a failure. Like I haven't had a baby,
right?
You know, and then on a lot of the world's biggest stages as an athlete, I mean, I have not performed up to the way that I thought that I could perform. I've had injuries. Yeah. And so I think that, you know, in that moment, I always describe it as, you know, I'm sitting at the bottom of Death Valley and it feels like I have to get to the top of Everest. And I think sometimes we need to soak in how that feels. We need to be okay with, you know, with the utter humiliation and just feeling like a complete fool. Like you put everything out there and just soak in that feeling. And then you kind of have to smile and say, okay,
this
moment is awful. And I don't ever want to feel like this again. And you have to use that as fuel for your fire. And it can't be big steps that you have to make. It has to be those little steps. But making those little steps to get to the top of Everest and using that feeling as fuel can help you so that, you know, your ego is kind of set aside and you're like, nope, I'm going to put in the hard work, the dedication, the grit, the perseverance, the tears, you know, all of that to be able to get to a space where I can be successful again. So for me, I almost feel like like failure is one of those incredible, incredible experiences that we all need to feel in order to do the great things. Because if we're just chugging along right in the middle, I mean, that's no fun. Right. You got to have really bad stuff and to feel it, to experience it, so that when those good times come around, that, man, they are so good.
So I'm hearing you saying that part of it is you just have, you've got to be in the game. And so recognize what you did that caused the failure, feel it, maybe have a little bit of a thick skin so that it doesn't bother you. You can move forward from that. I know for myself, I actually, every morning, I will go through a keynote presentation just for myself where I have my goals on this keynote presentation that I want to accomplish. And one of those goals is a picture of Midland Theater where you're looking out at the crowd, so to speak.
Yeah.
So one of these days, I'm going to get back out there with another opportunity. But hey, you got to learn along the way. You can't take yourself too seriously, or else you're not going to advance. I also call it falling forward. And so
yes,
you might mess up.
Yeah.
But as long as you learn something along the way, you've gained yardage, you're closer to that first down, you're closer to the TD or whatever sports metaphor you want to use.
Yeah.
But nonetheless, all right. Well, Shannon, thank you so much for being on today, agreeing to be a guest. And I wish there was some way I could have the listeners actually see your medals or touch your medals. But hey, maybe in some post-COVID world, we can do that again.
Yes. Well, actually, so I have my silver medal with me, but I actually loaned my bronze medal to the Olympic and Paralympic Museum that is in Colorado Springs. So if any of your listeners are going to Colorado Springs and stop by the museum, they can actually see my medal there, which is really cool.
Wow! All right, are you going to go back out? Are you going to go back out to Colorado Springs?
Yes. Well, they just opened the museum, and so I definitely want to go and see it. And I've loaned it for I think a little over a year or two. I didn't know how long I could part with it, but I thought what a cool opportunity that they asked me to have my Olympic medal hanging up there. So that was a big honor, and it's in good hands.
The reason why I mentioned that is we had a conversation off air where you told me that your current hobby, if you will, fascination is rock climbing. And you actually showed me some pictures where I was just picking myself up off the floor. You got to understand, Shannon, I am deathly afraid of edges. I'm not so bad with heights. I just don't like to be on the edges where I might fall off from that position of height. And I can't imagine rock climbing. But I remember Garden of the Gods. They have this rock there. It just shoots straight up into the sky. And I see people scaling that all the time. So I'm thinking, yes, next time you're in Colorado Springs, you might be trying that out at the Garden of the Gods.
I will be there. The Garden of the Gods is one of my most favorite places. It's so beautiful.
Okay.
So yes, now I'm going to be scaling those walls for sure.
Oh, my goodness. I just cannot. No, not me. I mean,
Thank you so much.
Yes, that would definitely be a fear of failure. Well, I would not be able to overcome that one. But nonetheless, I'm a big guy. Big guys fall harder. But nonetheless, thank you so much for coming on. I do appreciate it. And I can't wait till we get our Champions of the Law next class so we can meet again.
I know. Well, thank you so much. This has been awesome. I wish you all the best of luck. And to all the listeners out there, you guys are awesome. Thanks for listening. And I hope you have an awesome rest of your day.
Thank you for listening to today's podcast. If you enjoyed this podcast, please give us a 5-star review. We need your love to help us continue highlighting the funnier side of the law and bringing you interviews like this with Shannon Barkey. I want to give a special shout out to our Vice President of Operations, Wendy Oster, without whom this entire operation would be a complete and utter mess. Sean Wynn and 15.5 Features for making me sound way better than I actually do. And Ryan Kuhn and Paul Kuhn of Triplicity Marketing for our technical and computer support.